BP compensates victims, but can they collect?
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, good morning. I'm Bill Radke. When President Obama meets with BP executives today, he will direct them to set aside billions of dollars in an independently administered fund to compensate workers hurt by the Gulf oil spill. BP says it's already paid out some claims, about $70 million. But it turns out that money can be hard to collect. From the Marketplace Sustainability Desk, Adrienne Hill is in southern Louisiana, and she joins us live. Good morning.
Good morning, Bill.
So you've been talking to fishermen there who say their line of work doesn't lend itself to reimbursements. Why is that?
Well, fishing and shrimping are cash businesses, so proving income can be really hard. Some of these people don't have super detailed tax returns. BP is letting them bring in deposit slips, even paperwork from docks, whatever they have, but income can be hard to prove.
What about claims from other business owners?
Well, there are questions coming up about eligibility. I talked to the owner of a restaurant that was destroyed years ago in Katrina. They just reopened in March, and they just don't have a ton of tax returns to back up any claims of lost income, even though they were a viable restaurant. So they're not sure how BP is going to handle it. And then there are people who say they've just lost more than they've been paid out.
And what are you hearing from BP?
Well, I talked to Daryl Willis, who's heading up the claims process for BP, and he admits there were growing pains at the beginning and says the company's doing better now. I asked him how much the company might end up paying out in these claims, and he wouldn't even ballpark a guess. But he did say BP's in it for the long haul.
As long as people are damaged as a result of the spill and have lost the ability to make a living, we will be compensating them for their losses.
When I asked BP about the president's escrow account plan, they just said they stand by their obligations. And those obligations to people down here could last years.
Marketplace's Adrienne Hill in southern Louisiana. Thank you.
Thanks.
Last month, the U.S. renewed trade sanctions against Syria. So how come this week top U.S. diplomats and high-tech executives are visiting the so-called rogue state? Well, Marketplace's Janet Babin reports when diplomacy fails, there's always business.
The Syrian embassy says the trip's purpose is to tap into its growing IT market. And the high-tech firms on the trip, Dell, Cisco, and others, would certainly benefit from doing business with Syria. Right now, they can't because of U.S. sanctions. Edward Jerejian is a former U.S. ambassador to Syria. Now he's director of the Baker Institute for Public Policy at Rice University. Jerejian says the U.S. is betting IT could be a more effective diplomatic tool than sanctions.
There is a very burgeoning information generation in Syria, especially in the universities and amongst the youth and young businessmen.
But the high-tech mission is controversial. Princeton professor Dan Kurtzer served as U.S. ambassador to Egypt and Israel.
There are some dangers in providing access to advanced technology to a country that is producing weapons of mass destruction and still remains in a state of enmity with Israel.
Some human rights groups and Republican lawmakers oppose the trade mission. I'm Janet Babin for Marketplace.
Let's do the numbers. World markets keep following each other higher. After yesterday's party on Wall Street, stocks are up in Asia and Europe. Yesterday, the Dow Industrials pounced up 213 points and closed at 10,404.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Novo Nordisk. Since 1923, innovative developer of diabetes treatments and delivery devices at novonordisk-us.com. And by Vanguard, a client-owned company where the clients own the funds and the funds own the company. Learn more at vanguard.com.
There is a big economic summit descending on Toronto, Ontario, later this month. The G20 summit brings together finance ministers and central bankers from some of the world's major economies. Sounds wonky, but in Toronto, it's controversial. This event has become one of the biggest security operations in Canadian history. And as Marketplace's Sean Cole reports, that is testing the patience of many residents and small businesses.
I'm standing in the very pastoral Trinity Bellwoods Park, north and west of downtown Toronto, where the G20 summit is going to be. This is where they were going to have a designated speech area for protesters, a sort of protest zone. They're no longer going to have it here because the people who live and work near the park protested.
Yes, I joined a group on Facebook that was against it.
Did you really?
Yeah, I did. I did.
Valerie Barrio lives on Queen Street West, right at the edge of the park. She's on maternity leave from her job at Royal Bank of Canada. Had a baby strapped to her front when I talked to her.
This is a family-oriented park, as you can see, and I just couldn't imagine tear gas being used in the park. It was just the idea that I had in the back of my mind.
Along with more mundane concerns, like litter and shrub destruction. And besides, said people like Valerie Barrio, there are more suitable parts of the city where people's homes won't be affected.
Not just homes, but businesses too, right? Like, and I'm affected by both. But.
David Ginsberg lives on the north side of the park, but he also owns White Squirrel Coffee Shop here on Queen Street. An association representing more than 300 businesses like his worried that protesters might drive away customers and possibly break stuff. David went to a planning meeting.
The cop that was there was saying, oh, it could be 20,000 people. We were like, well, you know, no.
Megan Gray with the Toronto Police G20 planning team says her unit finally gave in to the fervor.
I don't know if I would say fervor.
Okay, it wasn't fervor.
I think that you had local area residents and businesses that were quite concerned about having this in their neighborhood park, and we took that into consideration.
And moved the protest zone to another park that's not as residential. Megan Gray says it'll be outfitted with cameras and microphones, broadcasting the protests into the convention hall. The thing is, I also went to a press conference of actual protesters. They listed a bunch of rallies they had planned for the week of the G20. None of them were located at the protest zone. In Toronto, I'm Sean Cole for Marketplace.
And finally, on an American Airlines flight this week, the first officer took sick with a stomach flu, so one of the flight attendants stepped in to serve as co-pilot. She had never flown a jet before, but the 767 landed safely in Chicago. "I was so excited," she said. "It was way more fun than serving meals from the galley." Isn't that a wild story? I didn't know flight attendants served meals anymore. This is the Marketplace Morning Report. In Los Angeles, I'm Bill Radke.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
"What is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?"
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.